Well, in spite of our sitting being relatively short, about 30 minutes or so, we've been sitting quite a long time this morning. And I like to stick with that general 90-minute rule. If you sit more than 90 minutes, then you're likely to look a lot more like the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. But I do want to just say what a pleasure it is to be sitting with you again, and how much I look forward to being here. And I have to say, I did have a few reflections, just about how I know that the present political situation in the U.S. is a nightmare for the whole world, but it's relative when you're in the middle of that trance, in that soup, in that contentiousness, and in the polarization and the othering and everything that's happening in the state, it's pretty uncomfortable, and it feels already better being here. Really happy to have the opportunity to step out of it, and I know how, because I've led many retreats in Canada this year. I think this is my sixth or seventh this year. And I know that there's a different kind of anxiety here, because you can't do much about what our crazy man. It's, maybe you don't think that way, and I generally don't like to make too many political comments, but I have to just say I'm relieved. And so thank you for your practice so far. Thanks for inviting me. And yes, thank you. No, sometimes I do get the which would be natural, I will get, not everyone is really developed and neighborly, and I will sometimes get people's, the projection of the frustration and negativity, I will feel it directed at me as though I am responsible, but nevertheless. Really happy that we have this rare, very rare and precious opportunity to marinate together in silence and developing the causes of happiness. And so important to remember that the world, I stole this from a teacher named Nisargadatta Maharaj. He says, the world is the way it is, and we're talking about our scene right now. The world is the way it is because people are the way they are. And as long as people are the way they are, the world will continue to be the way it is. But we all want a peaceful world, but peace is not something you can impose on the world. It has to start with peaceful people, wise people, non-harming people. And of course there is beside all the negativity being highlighted in the press, there is an undercurrent of so much love and activism and compassion and so many beautiful things that are happening. I know that's true in Canada as well. So we try to be part of that, part of a solution to the world being the way it is. And I don't know any more radical social action than purifying our hearts and minds in this form. I have a lot of, now 35 years of leading retreats and classes, and I have a lot of, a big sample size of watching what happens with our contractedness, our self-judgment, how it gives way over time to goodwill and activism and just caring and skillfulness. So don't underestimate the power of even a weekend to change your heart and mind, and I encourage everyone, I always do, to not take it for granted, because there may be another retreat coming along, or you may have a to-do list or whatever, but to really take advantage and let yourself really cook, and not just let yourself cook, but getting back to Sangha, really supporting other people to cook, and so committing yourself to stay. And you will, from time to time, especially when it's unpleasant tends to lead to not liking, Not liking tends to lead to aversion. Aversion tends to, the tension builds, and it usually releases through a proliferation of planning your escape. And so just try to notice that sequence, but don't believe your mind when it makes up a good reason to either doubt your practice or leave your practice. Just use everything as the manure of bodhi. Everything as the, I call this whole practice of happiness equal opportunity mindfulness. Anything that you can notice. It doesn't even matter if your mind is just having a homicidal fantasy. It could. I mean, I've actually had thoughts, you know, about our present politician, that if they were gone, it wouldn't. But, you know, of course that's deluded thought, because they're just a symptom. But nevertheless, things like that come into our minds, and so we just treat it as another thing to be known, and sense the engine that drives it, the frustration or helplessness or some vulnerability usually underlying our feeling of ill will and frustration. So we just notice it all. So expect your mind to come up with anything, and your body to show you experiences that you would usually keep moving fast enough and stay restless enough not to notice, but turn it all into the seed of awakening and seed of happiness. So of course we've been sitting a long time, and the only way that one can really stay embodied is if we balance the gentle stillness with mindful movements. And the mindful movement, of course, is a reminder that mindfulness or attention or awareness, I'll use these sometimes interchangeably, is completely 100% portable. It is not relegated to the sitting. Sitting here, I have that same sense of presence, Buddha nature, the presence of awareness, embodied, aware. But when I stand up, there's still the same presence of awareness, embodiment, and the Buddha knowing the Dharma. And when I walk, still same Buddha knowing the Dharma. So we just keep, in a sense, we stay on our seat the whole day, the seat of attention. And then instead of noticing the gentle movements of our breath, or just the whole body sitting and the gentle stillness, or the hands, we notice the movements of our legs and the contact of our feet, the bottom of our feet, the top of our feet, and just the swinging of our legs. And we just keep letting our attention gather and sustain, two mental qualities that help us go from this undifferentiated kind of scattered attention to a calm and to a focus, is a real essential ingredient in getting to know the natural happiness and peace again. It's just gathering and sustaining. I'll say much more about this as the day goes on, about what we call the concentration factors that are being activated and cultivated in every moment of just simple mindful attention of your feet or your breath or your hands or whatever it is that you're noticing. So in the walking, we just in the first part of our day, we'll just continue to keep some kind of anchor in our body. And all of this is what makes possible in the long run us to then find and recognize and get used to just the natural happiness of being aware. But we give it an anchor at first. So in the walking, how many of you have not done walking before? Anybody here? Oh, this is a veteran crew. That's great. Just a reminder, though, that we walk to and fro in our walking practice. And the the reminder in the walking to and fro, it reminds us that we're not going anywhere. And the point is to arrive in the step we're taking, in the moment we're experiencing. And yet it's really important in order to maintain that the vividness of the present and the intimate connection with what you're actually experiencing, it's important that you walk at a pace that is a little slower than normal, just so that you notice more. So a pace that you can stay interested. And so that usually implies a little slower than usual, but sometimes you may need to walk at a natural pace just for energy purposes. But a pace that allows you to stay interested, a pace that you can stay relaxed. And sometimes if your mind is not settled and you try to walk slower, you'll start to tighten up because your mind is not in sync with your body. So you want to listen to that your pace is relaxed, that you have that interest, and that a pace that you can stay in balance. Again, that's also determined by the state of your mind. If your mind is not so settled and you try to walk slowly, you'll start teetering. You'll start losing your balance. So you listen, balanced, relaxed, interested, and of course, whatever pace that you can stay attentive. And those are all kind of an indivisible whole: relaxed, attentive, interested, and relaxed. Relaxed, attentive, interested, and balanced. Otherwise, just do your walking as you usually do. As I had the good fortune, as I do every few years, to lead a retreat with Heather over in Salt Spring this summer, the week long, and she turned me on to the idea of the first walkings of the retreat to have them be more like a saunter. I like that. So you can saunter, but still saunter to and fro. Just that relaxed, balanced, interested, attentive, aware presence. And just a little slower than you normally go, a little saunter. And then as we go along in the retreat, you may be inclined as your mind settles to slow down a little more, as you settle a little more, you'll notice and slow down a little more naturally, you'll notice a little more. If you notice a little more, you're likely to have more interest. If you get more interested, there'll be a lot of arousal of energy for practice, dhammoja, kind of intense interest in the practice and energy. So if it stays superficial, you might not feel the same kind of captivation with what's happening. Of course, any time that you may feel bored in walking, what we do is we stop and notice what boredom feels like. We don't try to do anything about it or undo it. We recognize it as a mental state. And as a mental state, it's a change in conditions. Nothing you need to do anything about. And if you were going to do something, it would just mean to draw closer attention to what you're doing. So often, boredom comes from lack of attention.